I'm James Holman from The Washington Post, and this is Please Go On. Our guest this week is Philip Cohen, a sociology professor at the University of Maryland. Professor Cohen writes about one of his pet peeves in a thought-provoking piece published this week. He researches social identity for a living, and he really doesn't like all the generational labels that get thrown around. Think silent generation, baby boomers, Generation X, millennials, or Generation Z. What bothers Cohen is that instead of asking people which group they feel an affinity for and why, purveyors of social generations just declare the categories based on birthdays and then start making pronouncements about them. He says that's not how social identity works. Cohen says generation descriptors are either embarrassing stereotypes or caricatures with astrology-level vagueness. In one article, he notes you might read that millennials are liberal lions, downwardly mobile, upbeat, pre-Copernican, unaffiliated, anti-hierarchical, and distrustful, as well as, quote, people who get along well with their parents, respect their elders, and work well with colleagues. Good luck making heads or tails of that one. Here is our conversation. Professor Cohen, thank you so much for doing this. Your piece is a fun one. It's something that I think we think a lot about without thinking that we're thinking about it. The lead of your piece really grabbed me, which is the tennis champion Williams sisters are a generation apart, according to the Pew Research Center. Venus, born in 1980, is part of Gen X, in quotes. Serena, born in 1981, is a millennial. Meanwhile, Donald Trump and Michelle Obama are both in the same generation. The former was born in 1946, while the latter was born in 1964, making them both baby boomers. You write, before you start racking your brain to cram these diverse personalities into generational stereotypes, let me stop you there. Just don't. Can you talk about the, kind of the central thesis of your argument?
Yeah, well, you know, social change happens by generational change, partly. You know, people have experiences at certain points in their lives and it shapes them and the way they develop. So that's all real. The problem is when we seek to categorize that in ways that are not helpful. So we end up putting people in bins, like, you know, the Venus and Serena Williams example, where you have these sort of fixed categories and you try to drop people in them. It's fine to say older people, younger people, people born in the olden days, nowadays, kids these days. These are all relevant concepts for social analysis. But once we create those categories and especially put names on them, they sort of just take on a life of their own. And people start talking about avocado toast and student debt and trying to capture the experience of people based solely on age. And specifically on this sort of character traits, you know, people born in 1980 versus 1981 don't have different personalities because of that. It's just not reality.
These categories are imposed by survey researchers, journalists, marketing firms. You write that this is not how social identity works. What do you mean by that?
Well, we all belong to sort of certain, we have certain identities that can be categorized, you know, like ethnic or racial identities, gender identity, or where we're from or where we live or where we work or our occupation or our education. There are things that we can sort of adopt and that become identities through our lived experience. And, you know, age is potentially one of those, but it's the categories and the divisions between them that don't really work. Now, it's not to say that, you know, our life experience matters for the way we grow up and change, but it's hard to determine that in advance. You know, we talk about millennials, people born in the 80s and 90s, roughly, but half of them came of age before the Great Recession in 2008 and half of them after that. It's just a very, very different life experience. So if you're interested in how economic crisis affects people, you know, starting out in the job market, that's an important question for social analysis, but it only relevant to half the millennial so-called generation.
Well, it feels like on the millennial thing specifically, we recently heard the term, I don't even know where it came from, geriatric millennial. And that is, it feels like we're slicing and dicing and making up. It feels like there's a race to the bottom to come up with the cool new term that everyone's going to use. geriatric millennial, I guess, is supposed to apply to people like Mark Zuckerberg, or I think I would actually technically be a geriatric millennial. Where are these coming from? What is this about? It seems like perhaps that is a term that someone came up with to deal with what you're talking about. They're saying, here are these people who came of age before the 08 financial crisis versus after.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, the millennials functioned the way Generation X and Generation Z did once upon a time. It used to just mean kids these days. Right. And the problem is, you know, you keep saying that for long enough and you give them a name and then they grow up. And then what are you supposed to do? You know, so if Mark Zuckerberg is a millennial, you know, he runs the world. It's pretty awkward to be describing him as the same generation of kids these days as, you know, today's TikTok star, whose name I, of course, don't even know. So, yes, you're right. It's trying to reverse engineer it and say, okay, well, obviously there's a big difference here. So let's give that big difference a name. But, you know, if you look at baby boomers, even there is an actual definition of the baby boom, which was a real increase in birth rates from 1946 to 1964. But that doesn't
after
mean
World
that,
War II.
After World War II. And if you look at the birth rate trends, it's a huge spike. And there's certain things about that experience that they have in common. For example, crowded elementary schools. On the other hand, there are differences that emerge even just on that. You know, the early baby boomers had crowded elementary schools. The late baby boomers had brand new elementary schools. And then the people who came after them had school closures. If you grew up in the 70s and 80s, like I did, a lot of school districts were contracting because the baby boom was gone, you know, out of childhood. So, you know, if you could categorize people in various reasonable ways, but it's not helpful to attach those categories and try to give them more meaning that they can carry.
What are the historical origins of this? I think you mentioned in your piece that there was the lost generation. The first I think of is the greatest generation, something that I grew up hearing all the time. Who invented these generational labels in the first place? How have they evolved over time?
Well, I think the greatest generation was the first time we tried to create the tradition of naming new generations. That is, there was a language of lost generation for people for the end of the 19th century. But by the time we're talking about the greatest generation, we're already looking back on the Depression and the war. If I recall, Tom Brokaw had a famous book. And I mean, it coincides with really an explosion in marketing and social research and popularizing social research. I mean, we focus on the Pew Research Center because they talk about these categories a lot. You know, one of the great things about what they've done is they've really sort of democratized social science research by doing regular, ongoing, high-quality social surveys. And there are others also, and sort of putting out routine analysis. And it happened at the same time that people started the industry of pop psychology / sociology, I guess, is where you find, you know, sort of trying to be more scientific about saying kids these days.
Right. Totally. And it feels like a lot of these terms aren't really academic in nature. They didn't come from the academy. They're coming from, as you note, marketing. I guess social science people try to use it because they want to do their thing, but these aren't government sanctioned categories either.
Right. And that's important. One of the problems with the way the system has evolved is that people kind of think they are official categories. I noticed you said you think you're technically a geriatric millennial. Well, that just means that someone else has used that term and you're using it in the same way. Nothing wrong with that. But there is a sense of sort of the officialness of them. We're trying to reconcile them with these ideas that really have this, you know, they feel official. If you think, again, like race, ethnicity, gender, things where there actually are official and even legal definitions, but generations are not one of them.
If we stop going by generational labels, what is the alternative besides kids these days?
Well, truthfully, sometimes kids these days is reasonable. If you want to say young people these days are much more aware of the severity of the climate crisis and more willing to take serious action to deal with it than older people, like that would be, you know, a fair generation, a generalization supported in the research. I definitely don't think we should stop trying to analyze cohorts. That is, how old you were when certain things happened in your life is very important. I think when we go back and look at kids who are in school, in elementary school in 2020, you know, that's something that may mark them forever, you know, depending on what happens what 2021 holds. But there are uniquenesses to that experience. So the main thing we should do is actually look at the data and see, is there something we're interested in? Are we interested in kids who grew up using smartphones? Are we interested in people who were susceptible to the military draft in Vietnam? Like, we can look at the actual data and say, oh, well, you know, people who were subject to the draft have a different attitude towards the military than people in a subsequent generation. That would be reasonable. So I would say the first thing to do is just look at the data. If you want to break it up over time, use something simple like decades, people born in the 80s, the 90s, or whatever. And then if something really fits, if you really do get a group that has a unique experience by age, by all means, go ahead. If you even want to give it a name, you know, pandemials, you know, kids who were born during the pandemic, that may turn out to be meaningful. But I wouldn't say it is automatically just because it's a cool word that somebody else made up.
You wrote an open letter to the Pew Research Center. You mentioned Pew, obviously a huge player in this space. What was your letter about? I guess you got about 150 other experts in your field and related fields to sign it. And what sort of response have you gotten from that letter?
Well, we sent it to Pew because people look to them. And it really happened when so-called Generation Z came around and people were sort of mumbling about, gosh, maybe it's time to like draw a line at the end of millennials. And Pew sort of stepped in and said, okay, we're announcing like Generation Z starts in 1996 or something. And that's when a collective groan rose up from the social science community of people who say, oh no, here we go again. It's going to get a name and people are going to start layering stereotypes and giving it character traits that really don't fit. In there somewhere, I detected that, you know, maybe we were reaching a boiling point and we could get some momentum. So we sent Pew a very nice letter. You know, we respect them. We respect their work. We just want to help them get off this addiction to, I use that metaphorically, to these categories, which are very popular. Marketers love them. Journalists often use them. They're great shorthand for some things. But they really, in the end, we feel like they don't encourage the real understanding of social change. So we asked them to reconsider, to adopt better, more scientifically grounded practices for analyzing their trends. They wrote back and said they're considering it. They already were talking about how to handle their research on this. They're going to consult experts. They're going to talk about it. I don't want to speak for them, but I'm pretty happy that we got, you know, a good number of social scientists to speak up on this. And I think we can move the conversation and the common practices in a better direction.
How much of an impact would it make if Pew stopped using these generational labels and opted for what you're talking about? It's not like they can decree people should stop saying baby boomers, millennials, Gen Z. Those are so much now a part of our lexicon, but could this really make a difference?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the places where this has rubbed up against reality has been in human resources and management, where older people running companies have tried to sort of adapt their HR practices to the way younger people think. But when they tried to systematize that, you know, it often doesn't work. You know, the National Academies had a panel on and put out a report on, you know, should we think about generations when we're talking about employment practices? And they basically said no. But you should look at things like age, how old people are, the experiences they've had. So if we stop the sort of simplistic use of these categories, we absolutely still need to keep doing the research and find better ways to communicate to the public and to each other that social change happens. It's related to the age people are and when they experience certain things. But we just need to be more clear about it. Now, I can't say, you know, if Pew abandoned this, they would lose a lot of clicks. And so would a lot of journalists. And so I'm not too optimistic that we could sort of move to a world where social science is communicated totally accurately and we never use stereotypes or false dichotomies anymore in journalism or anything like that. But I think we could raise some awareness about it and stop trying to force the way we think into the existing categories. And that's very reasonable. You can say like young people are more liberal. That's been true for a long time. It's not generational. It's about how old people are.
Well, Professor Cohen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your piece.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was a great conversation. Thank you.
Studies show that most people can't even correctly identify which generation they are a part of, even when given a list of options. Which generation would you identify with? Which generalizations about that generation would you embrace? And which would you reject? Obviously, we need ways to talk about generations, but clearly there's a way to do it that's not quite so arbitrary. And surely society can be a little better about not making rash character judgments based solely on what year someone was born. That said, we're not holding our breath. Please Go On is produced by Julie Deppenbrock, with editing from Michael Duffy and Allison Michaels. Our theme music is by Ted Muldoon. You can listen and follow us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to read Professor Cohen's op-ed, you can find the link in our show notes. I'm James Homan, and I'll be back next Friday with another edition of Please Go On, because there's always more to say.